If it's Thursday, 6 p.m., that means it's time for Perspectives by John Pierce. I'm your host, and our engineer this evening is James Ziprot. This evening's topic is museums. Well, I'm going to ask our two guests, Joe and Jill, is that our topic, museums?
That's our topic, museums.
All right. All right. So I got that one straight. Now, the reason that I've asked them to come in, and by the way, I thank you so much with your busy schedules to come and give us some time here at WDIY. I ask that because this is Joe Guerrera's swan song. This year, he is stepping down from the post of executive director of the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum, which is located at Walnut and 4th Streets in Allentown. And he's been the director there for 18 years. Now, his partner, Jill Youngen, is the assistant director and chief curator. And she has been there for 28 years.
Correct.
So, Jill, would you say that Joe is a newbie?
I guess you could look at it that way. However, I kind of think he's, well, because of his skill, expertise, and wisdom, I call him an old sage.
And I'm just getting broken in, really.
Yeah, right. Just getting broken in. And, you know, it's like, you know, old shoes, and then he's going to pursue a whole other life.
Right.
And we're very excited for him.
Yes.
We will miss him tremendously, but we're very excited for the new adventures, the new journey that he will be taking soon.
All right. Well, maybe we'll get into that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. Joe, you want to talk about the country unloading things that it
yes.
has. Tell
yes.
us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, since the pandemic, and it's been a long time coming, and that is the current generation, they're unloading a lot of things. And people don't save objects. I mean, like, remember the day everybody had all these photo albums in their house? And people saved old marketing and ephemera. Remember when they had all kinds of calendars and pens with names on it and
right.
all kinds of marketing gimmicks? You'd go into every store and they'd be handing them out. And people would save these things. And there was a time when books were even more popular than they are now. And, of course, people get the Kindle. So there's a lot of three-dimensional objects. And, you know, people don't have the same interest. The new generations, the younger generations, don't have the same interest. Every day, Jill is faced with people showing up, calling on the telephone. They call the auction company and they say, well, we've got this and that, and we have this furniture, and we have these various household objects, and we'd like to sell them. And frequently the auction company will tell them we're not interested because they're not selling. And then they'll think what they want to do with them, and people become emotionally attached to their three-dimensional objects. We all do. And they say, well, we can't throw these out. Surely the museum needs them. I mean, you know.
90% of the time you don't need them? Or is that a low figure?
Well, I'll let Jill talk a little bit about, because she's become an expert. And when someone calls, you just can't tell them, right. no, we don't want it. Mm-hmm. We pride ourselves, Jill prides herself on taking the time to discuss it and explain. But the reason I want to bring it up is because people should think, don't wait till the end. Because there's many times we receive a telephone call. And someone from out of the area, whether it's a child or a nephew or a niece that inherited the house, you know, they want to sell it. And they're in from out of state. Maybe it's California. Maybe it's Chicago or who knows. And they want to clean everything out. We see this. We used to go out on those and look at things. But we were bringing things back to the museum and objects we really didn't need or want. And then we would hear an emotional case. And they would say, oh, I can't throw that out. You really have to do something for me. And then Jill would say, oh, yeah, okay, we'll take it. But I think she ought to talk a little bit about what she does. But one of the points I'd like to make is that people really need to be thinking in advance. If there's a takeaway today is that whatever you may have, there's a lot of studies out there that talk about how much people have shoved into their houses today. Go into a garage or a basement. They used to say hoarders were rare, but I think that they're becoming more common.
Oh.
So you can imagine the feeling we have when we show up, you know, years ago where we would show up and there'd be one or two 20-yard dumpsters in the driveway.
Oh, my goodness.
So the idea is if you're out front and you start thinking about what am I going to do with these things, don't leave them for someone else. We actually had someone walk into the museum one day who was dying. She actually was going to Sloan Kettering.
Yes.
And we felt so bad for her, and she hadn't done anything with some things that she had. And she even had this really big old wooden desk that we had no interest in. And she had tried to give it to the Historical Society 5 years before, and she was turned down. This was before I even got there. This was a long time ago. And then when she told us she was dying, which she was, she died soon after that, we took the desk and we started shopping it out to other museums. So we would call them on the phone. And we finally found another museum in another county after untold hours that actually came and picked it up. And because they needed an old wooden desk for something. But we were very lucky. So she was lucky, too. And the idea was the desk was not thrown out.
And one of the problems, what these objects have to have some historical interest, or you as a history museum are not interested. But also the space that these take up. Jill?
Right. Yeah. Well, first of all, we appreciate everyone who is thinking about us and in terms of donating something to us. You know, and many times this is something that was in their family for generations. And so they feel that it is important, and it is very important to them. I think we understand that, and we do take the time to talk to them about the object. But many a times it may be something that perhaps we already have in the museum. Maybe it's something that has no historic value. They may think it does, but it really doesn't. So first of all, it pays to talk to people. And frankly, you can form relationships that way and make them understand that although their things are value to them, they just don't fit into the museum setting. So that's a big way to somewhat start. For example, I'm talking about large items. We have gotten, over the many years since I've been the curator, I'm going to say at least probably 12, maybe even 15 offers for pianos. And this is from uprights to larger pianos. We do have some piano in the collection or two, actually, too. But they're huge. They're big. You can't use that many pianos. And again, they have to have some relationship to historical value, to the Lehigh Valley, to at times to the world scene. So if Grandma Minnie, played this piano as a child, we will, certainly not take that into the collection. One, because of the size, but also because there's not really any historical connection there. Right. So we're always very cognizant about that. We are also cognizant about what the condition an item is in. Sometimes people come, and I'll take an example of quilts. We have a wonderful quilt collection at the museum, and we have had some donors who have contributed just absolutely beautiful historical quilts that tell the story of the Lehigh Valley and tell the story of the people who own them and the people who made them through generations. And we appreciate that. We value those as well because, again, there's that connection there. But sometimes we have someone, in fact, just a few weeks ago, someone who contacted us about a quilt. And my first question is, all right, well, is there a relationship to the Lehigh Valley? Did one of your ancestors quilt this? And if the answer is no, well, then you just talk to them a little bit and tell them that there's another place where it will fit in much better. And then the next step is to ask about the condition. And quilts, they're textiles. Textiles, unfortunately, don't last. They deteriorate. And so that's our next step. What is that like? And then Joe mentioned it briefly, the provenance. again, that's how you make those historical connections. What is the history of whatever object that you are bringing into the collection? How does it help to tell the story of the Lehigh Valley and of the country and the nation? There's a lot of different checkpoints that you want to go through every time you're taking something into the collection. You also want to check and make sure it's not something that you already have. During the bicentennial of the United States, everyone had these plates, bicentennial plates.
Right.
Well, we have several of them, but after a while you finally...
Several dozen.
Yeah, we have to say, okay, you know, we have enough. Not that we don't value them, it's just that we have enough in the collection. We only have so much room in the museum. So we just have to be very, you know, use our discretion to make sure that we are using our space wisely and telling the story of the Lehigh Valley and America in the right way with those connections of things that people will find interesting and will teach them about their history.
Right. Well, Jill has emphasized connection with the Lehigh Valley. Joe Guerrera, who is retiring very soon from his position as executive director of the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum, is with us today. Joe is one of the biggest fans of Abraham Lincoln that I've ever known. And so one walks into the museum and is struck by Abraham Lincoln's likeness, by saying by him, and so on. So, Joe, how did your interest in Lincoln start?
Well, let me say this, John. I'm really struck by role models. Everyone needs a role model, no matter what age. Everyone should have someone that they can look up to and admire. We all need role models and mentors. I actually have two of them. It's not just Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King.
Okay.
And just to give you an example, the most popular cyber program that we do at the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum is on the life and times of Martin Luther King. This is the end of 2024 right now. But our biggest program last year that we did, that we delivered to more students, 1,400 students, I believe, was on the life and times of Martin Luther King. Think about that. And so you might say, well, what do you talk about? We teach them and we talk about how were they successful. Why was Lincoln successful? You know, we have a lot of divisiveness in the country now.
Yes, we do.
I mean, you have to be careful what you say and how you say it. And so Lincoln believed in certain precepts very much, reconciliation. The reason that I am fascinated with Abraham Lincoln so much is that he believed in reconciliation. He believed in forgiveness. And these are things, these are really important attributes that we're forgetting. It's not my opinion. David Brooks, the commentator for public television, wrote a book about it, How to Know a Person. And he talks about how we're losing our ability to talk to each other. So Lincoln was a great communicator. He only had 11 months of formal education. The point that I would make that by studying the life and the ideals and the concepts that Lincoln employed in dealing with adversaries in difficult situations, and Martin Luther King too.
Joe, excuse me, just hold that thought because James is telling me we need to take a break right now.
Okay.
So when we come back, we're going to hear more about Martin Luther King. My guests this evening, Joe Guerrera and Jill Youngkin from the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum. Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY's overnight delivery service is a refreshing mix of vintage and current popular music. You'll hear many of the artists played on The Blend and some from our folk, blues, and world programs. WDIY Overnight is a continuous mix of music popular with night owls and late shift workers. Listen Monday through Saturday night from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. and Sundays from midnight to 5 a.m. for this great mix of hand-picked music on WDIY.
And we're back. We were talking about Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King. Why? Because they are probably the two biggest heroes or role models for Joe Guerrera, our guest this evening. So, Joe, tell us about Martin Luther King.
Well, So Martin Luther King is easier for the average person to understand the concepts because he's in a more modern setting. Abraham Lincoln wore different clothes. He's from Civil War America. It's a different time. It's a different era.
He wrote beautiful prose. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Well, he did. In fact, with 11 months of formal education, he's still the best writer of all American presidents.
Wow.
But so Martin Luther King was brilliant. So the two of them together can help us. The idea is a human being wants to be all that he or she can be. This is a very small planet. There's too much conflict amongst ourselves. Carl Sagan, the great cosmologist, used to say that an organism at war with itself is doomed. He was talking about American culture. There's too much conflict in it, and we're distracted from the really important issues of the day. And so we spend too much time thinking about all the things that drive us apart instead of the things that bring us together. And so that's where Martin Luther King and Abraham Lincoln, and you know, another hero, I'm gonna just put in Roberto Clemente in there too. We're right next to the Roberto Clemente Charter School. Here's a guy that gave of himself. You know, remember this. At the end of your life, no one puts your financial statement in your obituary. The only thing they're concerned about is what did you do to make the world a better place? Who did you help? How did you atone for whatever mistakes you made? All of us are imperfect. I'm imperfect. So the idea is I want to be better today than I was yesterday. I want to be better tomorrow than I am today. And I have found by adopting the principles of Martin Luther King and Abraham Lincoln, you can become a much more effective and a more tolerant and successful human being. And that's what we're here on the planet for, to do.
Well, that's a great reason to have them as role models, for sure. And it's interesting because one from the 19th century, the
yes.
other from the 20th century.
Yes.
And here we are in the 21st century.
Yes.
So let's look forward to more role models as
yes.
we roll along, right?
What? Yes. And, and we spend too much time, you know, really looking at what's wrong instead of what's right. And one of the points I'd like to make, so what have I learned? I've been there for 18 years. Jill's been there for 28 years. I've learned a lot. And anyone on this planet that wants to be successful should be a lifelong learner. So what's the biggest thing I've learned, really? And what I want to say is what have I learned the most and what's really impressed me the most?
Joe, I just want to mention, when you say there, you mean the Lehigh Valley Heritage
yes.
Museum.
Yes.
You've been there 18 years.
Yes.
You're retiring now
yes.
from that position. Jill has been there 28 years, and she rolls on.
That's right.
Is that right, Jill?
That's right.
Yeah, that's
well, she
right.
has unending mm-hmm. fortitude. She's also younger than
that.
I am.
Okay. So?
So what have I learned? Right. I've learned the most from the children, and I want to say this. I am seriously impressed with the Allentown school system. I'm seriously impressed with the children because they're on our property all the time. They come there. We do programs for them. They visit the museum. We get to speak to them. Sometimes three or four students will be walking by the museum, and they'll come in. And
oh.
this happens on a fairly regular basis.
Excellent.
They want to know what it is, and we tell them, they can go through for free. We give them some free gifts. It might be some books. We might give them a copy of a rendition, a metal copy of the Liberty Bell or something like that. But I am really inspired because the city of Allentown has gotten progressively better in 18 years. It's not the same city I started in 18 years ago. All of this redevelopment is really expanding throughout the city. You see it everywhere. You know, human existence is imperfect. And one of the things that we do, we concentrate on what's wrong instead of what's right. And there's a lot of things that are right that we should be optimistic about. The thing that makes me the most optimistic, I'll give you an example. Maybe 2 days ago, there were a couple of students over by Trout Hall. People know Trout Hall. It's the Colonial Stone Mansion. That's one of the oldest sites around, built in 1770. But
Right next to the museum.
Right next to the museum. And so there's a couple of students there. And I always like to walk up and say, how you doing, guys? If somebody, or whoever it is. And they were really nice students. And I said, what grade are you in? And they told me, I said, what do you want to do when you get out? And this guy looks right at me and says, I'm going to become an engineer. What do you think about that? I said, I think you're going to do it. And I find a lot of motivation. And Allentown school system has gotten progressively better. The new superintendent, Dr. Birx. Dr. Carol Birx is like a human dynamo, really. I mean, she inspires me when she comes around. And by the way, she makes house calls. She's out there. There was a time when you wouldn't think that the superintendent of Allentown Schools would come down to our museum to talk a little bit and say hello and find out what's going on, how we can collaborate, how we can have more students come, how can we be better. Do you have any suggestions for us? This is what Carol Birx does with everybody on a regular basis.
Wow.
But I am really inspired by the kids. You know, there's just a little under 17,000 students in the Allentown school system, and they serve 25,000 meals a day. Because remember, a lot of students, when they get to school in the morning, they provide a breakfast for them and a lunch or something like that. But so that it's an enormous organization that really delivers big time. But I am seriously impressed with the quality of the students, how they talk, how they handle themselves, and they're getting better and better every year, and I am seriously optimistic. And I tell them, you're the future of America, and I'm counting on you because I want to make sure my Social Security check continues to come. And so they get that, and they agree with it. But that is, to me, the biggest takeaway I've learned in 18 years is to put your faith in the children, in the youth. They're getting better. They're not getting worse. They want to take their seat at the table of opportunity and be successful in this world.
And at the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum, you have a wonderful exhibit of all of the U.S. presidents.
Yes.
And I think of school children when I see that exhibit and think they should all go through this and at least learn names of these presidents. The other thing that I think that would catch their eye right away, in the lobby, Conestoga wagon.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that. How did that even make
That's
it through
Jill's
the doors?
That's Jill's specialty. She's going to tell you about it All because right. she wanted it there.
All right.
Well, yeah, it's a wonderful addition to the museum, and we're so happy that we have it. It took a while to get it because there are not that many in the United States, but finally, through perseverance, we were able to find one and have it in there. And it's been a wonderful complement to our exhibit on the American Revolution. The kids love it, and adults. Yeah. It's the first thing they see when they walk in. It is big. It definitely makes a statement. And it inspires people to learn about, well, what is a Conestoga wagon, especially children who have grown up with cars and planes and don't have any idea that things were different back many years ago.
My hunch is that the Conestoga wagon term is new for the students.
Oh, sure. It is. It is. And it is very new. And well, the whole concept of a wagon, you know, as a conveyance, as anything that large is new to them. And then, you know, to find out that this is how people traveled at one time and that they hitched it up to horses and the horses had to be driven by someone who walked alongside the wagon and they would put supplies in the wagon. And if they were going, say, to Philadelphia, it was not an hour or hour and a half to get there. They had have to look at it in terms of days. And so that it's a learning experience for them. And as well as looking around, we have all the other items around it that they would have used back then. And they also learn about Conestoga wagons as helping to build the United States, because they were not the particular one that we have with us. That was more of a local one. But they were also used to go out west, and people
traveled west. Where did you find the one that you...
Well, yeah, it's actually been around. That thing had quite a history. It had been in one time in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm, right.
And we were trying to track it down, and then a dealer picked it up, and it ended up going to South Dakota.
That's right. Yeah, it was South Dakota. Oh. Yeah,
and so then we called him, and he said, yeah, I've got the wagon, and I'm selling it. And so then we had to have it evaluated. So we enlisted the help of three national experts to try to appraise it and to find out how old it was and how much restoration had been done on it. So we spent, you know, probably 6 or 8 weeks trying to figure that out. He put it on hold for us. He said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll hold it for 30 days. He ended up holding it for 2 months before we decided we wanted it. So Jill had the body of the wagon evaluated, the undercarriage evaluated, because certain parts of it had to be restored.
Yeah.
A big part of it dates to 1880, mm-hmm. but the the box itself was rebuilt around 1950. Because these things were outside, they were wood. It wasn't pressure-treated wood, and it got rotten, and it's an older wagon. But the wheels date to about 1875, 1880, and the undercarriage. You can go on from there, Jill, because how it came to be and then how it was brought in from South Dakota. Remember that?
Yes, it was brought in a very, what was it, a 54-foot, is that? Truck. And
person drove nonstop.
Yeah, nonstop to deliver it to us. It came in the afternoon, early afternoon. Joe and one of the other people who worked and myself, after it was taken off the wagon, we pushed it into the museum and pushed it around until we got it into the right place where you see it today. So it was actually a lot of fun. It was exciting to have it come to us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you have anybody filming this while you were doing it?
No, because it happened so we got a call like late in the afternoon. It said the truck is leaving now.
Oh.
The shop said to us, "Yeah, you got to take it when you can get it." And so we had a truck that was available. This person needed to run out to the East Coast, to Philadelphia, to deliver something. It's coming. I mean, there was almost no notice.
Okay.
And so we weren't even ready for it, really.
Right. Yeah. We took a few pictures, but that was it. And
and it was paid for by a donor.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's another thing I want to say is I really need to say this, and I think Jill will add to this, is we can't thank the donors. A lot of times, any donation to a museum or a nonprofit is very important. You know, and I've become a big fan of your radio station. I don't want to forget that.
Me too.
Oh, thanks for putting that in, Jill.
No. Yeah. I'm going to tell you right now, my car is set up on your numbers. How many people can walk in here and tell you you're 8810? How many people can do that? Probably not too many, right?
Not too many.
So the first thing I do when I get in my car is when I turn it on, I want to see what's on. But it's important to say that in the period of time I was there, to thank so many kind and generous people, the donors are what make it all happen. I mean, everybody's important to you. Every child that walks in there, every adult, no matter what they're there for, it really means something to us. Whether a person gives a donation of $5, $5,000, or whatever it may be, it really all at the end of the day adds up and makes it all possible.
Let's, at this point, because we're running out of time here, we have about a minute, let's give our listeners information. How might they get in touch with the museum, possibly to get more information or to donate?
Mm-hmm. Well, the best thing to do is just to give us a call. And they can call us at the museum at 610-435-1074. They can also, if they would like, email us as well. And they can check our website out for the email. We have some pretty long emails, so I don't think we probably have time to mention those right now. But
the best is a telephone call.
Yeah, we love to talk to people. And so just give us a call and we can talk and, you know, find out what they have and make arrangements and that'd be great.
What drew me to the Lehigh Valley Heritage Museum was the series of talks that are given on Saturdays, not every Saturday, but once in a while at 1 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
Anyone who's, a lifelong learner.
Yes.
You have lots of them who come in to listen to experts on their subject, and they have a big room that is crowded with people to hear these talks on a Saturday at 1 p.m. at the museum, which is at Walnut Street and 4th in Allentown.
432 West Walnut Street.
We have run out of time. I thank my guests, Joe Guerrera. Wish you well in the future, Joe.
And thank you for having us today.
Yeah.
Sure.
He
and Jill Youngkin, who is continuing on at the museum. I'm John Pierce. Thank you so much, dear listeners, for listening. Our engineer is James Zibrot. And until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.